On today's Queercast, Alexander Billings is back with me, and we have one half of the Indigo Girls. That's right, Emily. She's never been on the Queercast before, though we've talked to Amy many times, and it's so great to have Emily on to talk about the new Indigo Girls CD and the tour. Plus, Alex, we talk about Adam Lambert. Is she a bigger fan than I am? What do you think? And the word drag. It's Alexander Billings again with semantics and language and vocabulary, and she has an opinion. Plus, news and what's going on in the theater scene. It's a really great show. You're not going to want to miss it.
Windy City Queercast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
We're talking mega gay.
Oh, I like that.
I'm Alexander Dunn.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Queercast, show number 307. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Alexandra Billings.
Hello, Alex.
Hello, Amy. That was my impersonation of Florence Henderson.
Florence Henderson. I love Florence Henderson.
I don't know
Henderson.
Why. I've never done her before, but I thought I'd like to just try it out.
I thought it was good.
Thank you.
Florence's, hello, Florence's flow. That could be like your Katie's Corner. It could just be Florence's flow.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Put on that little wig. That would be quite funny.
Oh, man.
I would like that.
I would like it, too.
You would look
I like Florence Henderson. I think she's a hoot. And have you seen that thing? Are you there's a video going around on YouTube that she did some benefit where she played Mama Morton in Chicago.
Oh, I don't know that.
Chicago. It's hilarious. You need to go look it up. And everybody who's listening, here's what you have to do. You have to go to YouTube and you have to type in Florence Henderson, Mama Morton, because that's the character from Chicago. And it's this benefit thing that she did like a couple of years ago. And she's literally in like dominatrix black gear, leather, like with her blahungas pumped up, pushed up to her chin, and her ass is like juki juki, and her thighs are going like that. And then everything is moving. And she's literally with the whip and everything. She's like, when you're good to mama, eat my big fat hootie. And then all these scantily clad men are all around her. And it's Florence Henderson. And it's really funny. Oh, and they start out the video with little pictures of all six kids, Greg and Marcia and Jan and Cindy and everybody else. And it's really funny.
I saw Alice in a kick line during Crazy for You back in 1990, I don't know, something, 92, 93. She went on tour in Crazy for You.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. And she did a kick line. She was quite good in the show. Because everybody
genius.
Does a big tap kick line, you know, at the end of that show. It's a big tap number. One of the few shows I've ever seen where Susan Stroman, you know, well, actually all Susan Stroman shows, she gets you like up on your feet at the curtain call, man. She knows how to do it old school. So
she really does.
Hey, we didn't get to talk at all about, and we will have a segment in the next show, because Steven Rader and I are going to bring you a little bit of Windy City.
Steven Rader!
Who I love! about the big Windy City Gay Idol we just had this past weekend, and it was huge. But we have never talked about, you know, we talked about the devastating news of Prop 8. Well, devastating. Alex says it's still progress, but the news of Prop 8 being standing and still, you know, holding. And in the same 7-day period, we also learned that our gay idol was not going to win, the television idol. Adam Lambert won second place, was just the runner up for for the American Idol. Did you follow Idol at all?
Look, I got to tell you something.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that a lot of people are going to hate me.
Yeah.
And I mean, no disparaging remarks to this child, because he's talented. He has a gift, most certainly. Adam, the sound of his voice makes me want to stick my head in the toaster.
Yeah. You're not a rock person, huh?
I love rock and roll. No. I love rock and roll. I love Peter Frampton. I love The Who. I love The Stones. I love rock and roll. Love it. Love it. Can't get enough of it. But when I see a singer get up there and go, I want to kill myself.
So you're not like a Guns N' Roses or Aerosmith?
Guns N' Roses. I love Guns N' Roses.
Or Led Zeppelin.
I love Led Zeppelin.
Queen.
I love Twisted Sister. I love good rock and roll. What that child does is take songs, climb inside them, and poo all over them. And then
Alex.
Listening to him literally makes me feel like he has explosive diarrhea. There is no control as to what it's literally a sound I cannot stand. And when I heard him sing, I immediately turned it off.
Okay,
so that was like the fourth episode. And
okay.
I hadn't watched it.
Well,
since.
That is totally subjective, because he obviously has enormous control over his voice. I think he's going to be he's going to have quite a little career.
I'm sure he will.
I will say, and I said this, and I don't know if I recorded it on a podcast. You listening will have to tell me. But I did say this, and I said this to my partner, and I said this to my father and some other people, that I said 4 weeks before, when it was Allison and Danny and Adam and Chris, and maybe Matt was still in it, I can't remember. I said that I thought that the finals should be Chris and Adam. And Kelly was like, really? No, it's totally going to be Danny. And I was like, no, he's boring. And he will only sell to women over 45. So I said Chris is going to be Chris and Adam. Unless Allison pulls an upset, but she's so young. She's just too young. It's not that she's not talented. She's going to have a huge career as well. But I think that Chris, and I said this at the time, will sell more CDs than anybody else from this year. And Kelly was like, you're crazy. And I was like, no, I'm not, because he's the absolute most palatable. He's the John Mayer. He's like the Maroon 5. He's like the cute guy, all-American guy, who sings songs that we can kind of all sing, but he has a great voice. He does have a very good voice, and he's got good musicality. So I said we could be served up less, you know, a lot less.
I like him.
I do, too. I always liked him, and I really liked him from way on out, and I really never liked Danny. And, you know, I think
nobody should
sing like Michael McDonald, but Michael McDonald. And, you know, we saw where Michael Bolton led us. So we don't need that.
Yeah. I didn't this year. I didn't see a Jennifer Holliday. I didn't see a Fantasia. I didn't see a Kelly Clarkson. I didn't.
No, there were no women.
I didn't see that kind of, it's not just the women. I meant I didn't see any kind of oomph.
Oh, come on, Alex. You have to at least give Adam Lambert props for going out and being extremely theatrical, wearing eyeliner, doing the glam rock thing, trying to bring that back. He's definitely not copying anybody of today. Now, he's definitely echoing people from your era and my era.
I beg your pardon.
Well, I don't know. Our parents' era. But since we're barely legal. But I mean, but seriously, like, we've not seen anybody be that bold on American Idol because the notion was you couldn't be that bold. Half of them, you know, half of them with girlfriends couldn't talk about that they had girlfriends, or God forbid, if they had a boyfriend, they definitely didn't talk about that. And if they did, they usually got kicked off before they hit the top 10.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. Have you heard about the debacle that went on that dance show with the three judges with the screamy lady?
Oh, yes. I sent out a Twitter on it. You're not following my Twitter.
That was insane. And now the guy judge, the English guy,
Nigel Lithgow.
He's now come up with a statement that said, this killed me. He came out with a statement that said, and I'm paraphrasing, something about, we want dance to be masculine, and we don't want to perpetuate the stereotype that dance feminizes men in any way. And I keep thinking to myself, okay, wait a minute. Are you talking about the difference between Nijinsky and Baryshnikov? Are you talking about – what the hell are you talking about?
Michael Bennett Alvin Ailey?
The dumbest statement I've ever heard in my life. You can't – if you're going to emasculate somebody – then you're putting your own judgment on them, whether it's two men or two women. And I'll tell you something, had it been two women, would have been a different story. But anyway.
Yes, ma'am. It sure would
I'm just saying that, like, you know, let these two guys dance. Let these two – who cares? Are you kidding me?
Well, and and you know, it was what pissed me off. And I wrote every executive of Fox I could find. And, of course, he issued apology the next day. And I did post this on my Twitter. And I also posted on our blog – at Windy City Queercast, my letter that I sent out saying, you know, how dare you, you know, perpetuate.
Send me that letter, Amy. I print that on my blog. Send that to me, will you?
Oh, yeah. You know, how dare you, that I've stood by and watched season after season this guy tell male dancers to butch it up. You need to be more strong. And yet I've never heard him say to a breakdancing woman, you need to like soften up, you know, of course, once they get on the show, they definitely have to adjust their bodies to different styles. But when they come on to dance in this first round, this is truly like authentically who they are. Now, if they're going to be good enough to go all the way to the end, they will have to, you know, do different styles, which may call for them to bring different personalities and characteristics and lines to how they dance. But if we're just trying to watch somebody dance, I don't think it would matter if it was an extraordinary dancer. And I remember a year ago, there was an extraordinary dancer that was on, and he and what I also love is, you know, of course they pick these people out because how many, you know, thousands of people dance, and how many do we actually get to see? So they're making a point, the executive producers, of which he is one, Nigel Lithgow. You know, they're making a point who they show. And obviously showing the two guys was done for a laugh. And it gave him an opportunity to say, male dancers need to butch up. I need to dance like men. And I'd like to see you dance with a woman next time. And I want to say, you know, I think you should just judge them on their lines, their dance, their authentic self, and then put them into the show and see if they can dance with a girl. Maybe all the guys should have to dance with a guy. I mean, eventually they do. Usually in the finals, when they have the final four and it's two men and two women, the women do a dance together and the guys do. And it's not usually sexual. But, you know.
Well, that's, you hit it right on the head. That's the problem, because, and I was talking to Chris Ann about this too, my wife, Chris Ann, about this too. You know, I was saying, when you're in a couple's dance, somebody has to lead and somebody has to follow.
Right.
In order for any kind of a ballroom dance or any kind of dance like that where it's two people together, you have to have a leader and a follower.
Yeah.
And the problem is, we certainly can't have a man following another man. It's,
well,
dance is pure expression. Mm-hmm. It's pure, ultimate expression. So it's like saying, I think that Kenny Rogers sings more masculine than, you know, somebody else. It's ridiculous. It's an insane thing to say. And the other thing, too, that I've noticed is that every time that guy gives any kind of dance notes, he usually puts in that word masculine. Mm-hmm. So who's got the problem here?
Well, and this is what the point is. I do think that if he had not said those comments, the woman on the panel who her name is escaping me right now. She's got the mohawk. She's like really intense and extremely emotional. And she did make a comment that it was a bit odd for her to watch the two of them dance because she couldn't tell you know, it's not that she needed one of them to be the female and the male, but because there wasn't a lead and there wasn't a follower, she didn't really know how to watch their technique and didn't really know how to watch them, that it would have been easier for her if one of them had assumed, because they were being judged on ballroom dancing, you know, you want to watch the person who is leading so you can critique how they lead and critique the person following. And she seemed to not make it about gender. But of course, he made it about gender.
Yeah,
which
yeah,
is why so many people, you know, took it to him. And, I, you know, I think it's an important statement because the talent that goes into that show, as opposed to Idol, the absolute mountains of hours and sweat and sacrifice that those kids are on that show is exponential times 1,000. To anybody on Idol.
I agree with you.
And so to cut somebody down in that process, I think, is really a vicious thing to do. And it's an awful thing to make it so petty when you have young people watching that show and make it about masculine and feminine and sexuality. And,
well, especially when you've got all these young boys who, you know, want to dance. And now they're thinking,
exactly.
You know, this is a huge show for dancers. And now they're thinking, oh, boy, am I dancing like a girl? Am I dancing? No.
Exactly.
It's about, are your toes pointed? Are your, you know, are you standing on your head the correct way? Are you? That's what it's about.
Yeah,
it's about your technique. And it's about your soul and your spirit coming through in your dance.
Yeah.
It doesn't have anything to do with masculine or feminine.
It doesn't.
I'll tell you. You know, we were talking about stereotypes for the longest time last night with a friend of mine. And he's very much into – I'm going to get myself into a lot of trouble here. But he's very much into RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yep.
And I got to tell you, I've watched that show a couple of times. And I think it's very funny and very cute. And I'm 50% of me is really glad it's on TV. And the other 50% of me is so sick and tired of hearing the word drag, I could throw up in my own shoe. Because here's the thing. If you were to replace drag with fag and call it RuPaul's Fag Race, I don't necessarily know that it would have that many followers. What we're doing again is we're stereotyping the transgender community. Once again, for everyone's bemusement. You know,
well, I'm not a trans person, but I think drag can be used with either gender, whereas fag is only used for one gender. I mean,
look,
women can drag.
Here's the deal, though, Amy. If you had grown up and because you're not a transgender person, it doesn't resonate as much with you.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, ask any transgender person on the planet, and I'm telling you, we find that word offensive.
Mm-hmm.
It is an offensive term. It's an old term. It's archaic. It has its roots in a whole other different place and time.
Yeah.
It needs to be eradicated. We don't need it anymore.
No, I know my dear sweet Angelique Monroe, you know, she only refers to herself as an illusionist, and she will not, you know, and she does a lot of personalities, you know, but I mean, you're right. Like, she would never say that what she
never
does is drag.
In my life, in any of the parts of my career, and I've had a lot of parts in my career, and I have never
of career in your parts too.
Hello, and a lot of those checks have cleared. But my point is that I've never worked with another performer who has said to me or to the world at large, "I am a drag queen." Now, RuPaul claims that title, and that works for her, and that's great. But that's not 90% of us,
right,
working or non-working.
Yeah.
Ever do we consider ourselves drag queens?
Wow.
Ever. Again, we're perpetuating stereotypes.
Yeah, we are.
What's the – why? Why? Why,
I
why, why?
Know.
I'm not against lip syncing. I'm not against what they do. I think it's great. It's filled with joy. I used to do it. I love it. I loved being a showgirl. I loved it. I'm a showgirl at heart.
Yeah.
But, you know, I did this thing, Amy. I don't know if I ever told you this, but I did a little TV gig. Doesn't matter which one. But I did a little TV gig years ago, and I was playing a transgender character. And, you know, we were doing take after take and take after take of this one scene. And finally, this director comes up to me, and he says, I'll never forget this until the day I die. He comes up to me and he goes, okay, everything's going great. I love all these different, you know, ways, these different colors. Here's what I'd like. I'd like you to be a little bit more transgender. And I went, I'm sorry, I don't know what you mean. And he went, well, you know, just more. And I went, nope, still don't get it. Now, I knew exactly what he meant.
Uh-huh.
I wanted him to say it. And I'm thinking to myself, what exactly do you want me to do? Do you want me to come out in blackface, eating a watermelon and singing Mammy? What is it that you want me to do?
Mm.
Why don't you just tell me what it is you want me to do? That is what that phrase does. That yeah. drag queen phrase. That's what it does. And that's why I hate it. Because again, it goes back to stereotypes, and it infiltrates the gay community. It infiltrates different races, different religions. It puts labels on everybody. Can't we just knock it off?
Well, it's interesting. I think words are becoming important. I think, you know, the gray area, which I think Adam Lambert kind of defined a bit of gray area for America. I think that it's becoming compelling and it's still controversial. And I love that you bring a new perspective to this, you know, this language that we just subscribe to and that we need to continue to question and evolve. And it's something great that I love that we've been able to talk about actually in the past few shows. I have a big interview in this show, so we can't fill up all the time. That's the
no.
There's just so much of you that I could just spread you around, Ms. Billings.
Well, I'm a lot like butter.
You are butter.
Yes. Butter.
Do you remember that ad? I used to love that ad, butter.
Don't fool with Mother Nature.
So we have news. We that we need to bring to you and what's going on in the theater scene. And then we are back with Emily from the Indigo Girls right here on the Queercast talking about the new CD that the Indigo Girls have coming out and their tour. And they are coming to Chicago. So everybody get your tickets.
Hi there. I'm a Miller Lite Brewmaster.
And I'm a Miller Lite Drinkmaster.
It's the Brewmaster Drinkmaster Show.
You know, most people know that Miller Lite tastes great, but up until now, only brewmasters like me knew why.
Well, most people know that my friends and I are the most dominating presence in the Kalamazoo Western Division Level 3 Softball League, but very few know why.
Huh. You see, we add the hops first for flavor, second for balance, and a third time to lock in the great Pilsner taste by enhancing the foamy head.
Yeah, well, we don't need fancy softball strategery to win.
We call it the triple hops brewing process.
Well, we call it heart, Mr. Man.
We're on the same team here. I thought you would appreciate this new information.
I apologize. I just wish I had something as important to share.
Well, buy a six-pack of Miller Lite and you will.
Miller Lite brewmasters have to know the ins and outs of triple hops brewing. The only thing you have to do is enjoy the great-tasting light beer. Miller Lite. Great taste, less filling. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Live responsibly.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News.
In California, the ACLU reached a settlement agreement with the Vallejo City Unified School District in a case in which high school student Rochelle Hamilton claimed anti-gay harassment and bias. Among other things, Hamilton said that while at Jesse Bethel High School, she had to participate in a counseling group that was meant to discourage students from being part of the GLBT community. The district will now adopt a pro-GLBT policy and train staff members.
HRC has launched hrc.org/equalityinthecourts to help provide key information on the Supreme Court nomination process to the GLBT community. The organization's criteria for judges includes a demonstrated commitment for GLBT HIV/AIDS communities and an understanding of the separation of church and state.
The U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee will hold the first congressional hearings on the Uniting American Families Act, which would legalize same-sex binational couples. The hearings are really tremendous and an indication of the momentum and traction that the issue has on the Hill, said Rachel Tiven, Executive Director of Immigration Equality.
ExxonMobil shareholders have again rejected a proposal to add sexual orientation and gender identity to the company's equal employment opportunity policy. Before merging with Exxon in 1999, Mobil had sexual orientation in its policy, but the category was removed when ExxonMobil was formed. Overall, 85% of Fortune 500 companies include sexual orientation in their policies, and more than 35% have gender identity in theirs.
In Rhode Island, a Brown University poll showed that 60% of the state's registered voters are in favor of same-sex marriage. A state legislative committee has not passed a marriage equality bill, despite the fact that a measure has been introduced annually for the last 12 years.
Same-sex marriage may not be able to take place in California, but gay divorces can. Since there are still 18,000-plus legal same-sex couples in the state, all the rules of marriage are valid, and that would include divorce.
Chicago's Better Existence with HIV Beehive will kick off a 60-day fundraising drive to support its programs and help to bridge the gap in decreased and delayed funding. The state of Illinois has not made a single payment toward a grant that began last October. That's 7 months of Beehive carrying expenses without reimbursement, Executive Director Eric Nelson said. Visit beehive.org for more.
And in world news, in Thailand, trans males, sometimes called ladyboys, acknowledge that while society has become more accepting of them, there's still a distance to go before total equality is achieved. At the Miss Tiffany Universe pageant, in which the contestants are all trans, Kachikorn Surajan said, "I wish we would be more accepted in society nowadays. The reason I joined this contest is to tell society that we are human and we think just like normal, real men and real women."
In England, Trans London, the largest group in the capital for all trans-identified individuals, is planning a boycotting of Pride London. The decision came after trans women were denied access to female toilets at last year's Pride, and one was reportedly sexually assaulted. This will be the first year the organization will not participate in the festival, which will take place July 4th.
Archbishop Desmond Tutu recently received a standing ovation when he spoke out in support of gay clergy at the Church of Scotland General Assembly. At one point in his speech, Tutu said, "Lesbians, gays, so-called straights, all, we are family, we are sisters and brothers."
And entertainment news, Nigel Lithgow, the executive producer and judge on the reality show So You Think You Can Dance, has apologized for anti-gay remarks he made after two men danced a samba together on the show's premiere. Lithgow said, "I think you probably alienate a lot of our audience. Do you know what? I'd like to see you both dancing with a girl." Lithgow then continued online, "The same-sex ballroom guys did remind me of Blades of Glory. However, I'm not a fan of Brokeback Ballroom." Lithgow later said, "I sincerely regret the fact that I have upset people with the poor word choices and comments I made. I am not homophobic, and it was extremely upsetting for me to be classed as such."
Another of the stars of the 1990 cult film Paris is Burning, Octavia St. Laurent Mizrahi, has died after a battle with cancer. Mizrahi is the sixth of the film's eight primary stars to pass away, along with Willy Ninja, Pepper LaBeouf, and Venus Extravaganza. Paris is Burning is credited with unveiling the world of drag balls and voguing.
American Idol judge Cara DioGuardi revealed singer Adam Lambert's true sexuality on The View, saying, "I don't think that Adam was ever in the closet. I think he was always openly out." However, Lambert has played down his sexuality, saying people should keep speculating and calm down.
And speaking of Lambert, he has fired back against former Idol runner-up Clay Aiken, who recently badmouthed Lambert singing. Lambert said, "I don't know Clay. I'm glad he's getting headlines now, though, because he wasn't before. If he wants to ride my coattails about it, good for him."
It's official. T.R. Knight is off Grey's Anatomy. Reportedly, the tension between Knight and the show's creator, Shonda Rhimes, was to blame for the actor's departure. However, it appears Katherine Heigl will be back for next season.
Drew Barrymore, Kathy Griffin, Sophia Bush, George Takei, Kelly Osbourne, and Deborah Gibson were among the celebrities who took to the streets of Hollywood to protest the California Supreme Court's decision regarding Proposition 8. In addition, George Clooney said, "This just should invigorate people to get it back on the ballot in 2010 and 2012, and every 2 years until all people are allowed a basic civil right." And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Bud Light presents Regeneration Tour 2009, starring ABC. Friday night, June 26th, on stage at Rosemont Theater. Don't miss ABC. Berlin. Wang Chung. 17, Cutting Crew, Generation Tour 2009. Friday night, June 26th at Rosemont Theater. Get more at regenerationtour.com. Get tickets Friday morning, April 17th at 10 at Rosemont Theater Box Office, Ticketmaster, Ticketmaster.com, or RosemontTheater.com. Brought to you by Bud Light. The difference is drinkability.
A timeless classic, a story of family, laughter, struggle, and hope. One of the most glowing creations in the history of musical theater. Tradition, tradition. Fiddler on the Roof. The world's favorite family musical. A tradition for young and old. Starring from the beloved motion picture, Topol in his farewell tour. Share the magic with the whole family and start a new tradition. Don't miss your last chance to see Topol in this special farewell performance of Fiddler on the Roof.
3 weeks only, June 10th through 28th at the Ford Center Oriental Theater. For tickets, call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of June 1st, 2009, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Heart-pounding attraction. All-night conversation. Love person. Now on stage at Victory Gardens Theater, captures the giddiness of new love affairs as American Theater Magazine. Love Person introduces us to two couples, gay and straight, three cultures, and four languages in this love mystery, performed in American Sign Language, Sanskrit, English, and projected email. Use the code FRESH for $5 off tickets. Order now at victorygardens.org.
American Theater Company, in association with About Face Theater, presents Hedwig and the Angry Inch by John Cameron Mitchell and Stephen Trask, an award-winning rock musical about a young East German who gives up a little part of himself in order to escape communism for freedom in the U.S. Hedwig and the Angry Inch is now extended through June 13th at the American Theater Company. For tickets, visit atcweb.org.
Writers Theater presents A Minister's Wife, starring Kate Fry and Alan Schmuckler. And Michael Halberstam directs this world premiere musical adapted from Shaw's Candida by Austin Pendleton with lyrics by Jan Tranen and music by Josh Schmidt, the award-winning composer of Adding Machine. Sharp, witty, and tender, A Minister's Wife explores the fires burning beneath the surface of an ordinary marriage. For tickets, visit writerstheater.org. And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Hi, I'm Amy Ray, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Looking out across suburban yards, to the construct of our days, to the thinning of the trees, how come I only build a house of cards? Gets blown to pieces by the fall's first fickle breeze. When I feel that stirring, the illicit kiss, it's just the cool tongue of the devil with a sucker in his midst. One day I'll change. You'll be the first one that I call. I owe you an apology.
Well, for more than two decades after their debut album, Strange Fire, the Indigo Girls are still making relevant music that sings from the heart with its poetry, tightly spun harmonies, and evocative dynamics that are the push and pull of Amy Ray and Emily Saliers. I have talked with Amy many times over the past few years, but I have never spoken with Emily, and so it's so exciting to have on the Queercast for the first time Emily to talk about the new CD, Poseidon and the Bitter Bug. Hey, Emily, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks.
You're the silent voice on my radio show. You've never been on. It's so exciting.
silent no longer.
Silent no longer. You know, Amy's always hawking something, so I rarely get to talk to you, and it's really an honor. What is the secret to having this lifelong working relationship with Amy? I mean, you've known each other since you were children, and you've been making music and living a professional working life for over 20 years. What's the secret?
Well, there's a lot to it, actually. You know, there is the fact that we've known each other since elementary school. Our families grew up in the same neighborhood, pretty much. You know, we ended up going to the same high school. We joined the chorus, became like best buddies in high school, and then went off to different colleges, and then came back and transferred to Emory in Atlanta, unbeknownst to the other. So just like the trajectory of our lives almost feels like it was fated to line up. But beyond that, in terms of creativity, we write our songs separately, and, you know, Amy brings something to Indigo Girls that's different from what I bring, so we sort of have two musical lives we can live, and we also have very, very independent lives. You know, Amy's just finished her third solo record, and I own a restaurant, or wrote a book with my dad, so we do separate projects, and so when we come together, we're always excited to be working together again, and we share a very similar value system, and you know, give each other lots of space, and it's worked out. It's tremendous.
What sounds like what's so great is that it isn't your whole life. And yet we look at you and we think from the outside, like it is, like the Indigo Girls is kind of their whole life. But as you said, you're writing and doing your projects. She's, you scored a film. She's doing solo albums. And it sounds like that keeps it really grounded and healthy for each of you to feel satisfied that you're coming back to something. When you go on tour, you have a new CD that you want to create.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we're always finding ways to keep things fresh. I mean, just on a daily basis during the tours, we make a new set list every night, try to honor spontaneous requests from the crowd. Now we're working with Julie Wolf, who's a tremendous keyboardist, writer, singer, who's living in the Bay Area, and she's on tour with us, and she's kind of like having a whole band in a person. So that's just, you know, elevated the show and the experience, and she's a lovely person, and the vibe is good. You know, we're a good team. We got our heads and hearts in the right places, so it's always a joy to be working together.
I'm going off track of where I was even going to head. I'm thinking, has anyone ever approached you all of knowing that Amy's done her independent CDs, you are a writer and have scored film. Has anyone talked to you about getting on the bandwagon of scoring a musical? Is this something that's ever come up for you?
You know, I would love to score a musical. I'd love to write a musical. I'd love to write music for film. I'm just really, really interested in projects like that that aren't specifically just like, you know, picking up a guitar and being a singer-songwriter. And so I have many, many creative friends out there, and we're sort of like tossing the pebble in the pond, and one day it'll come to fruition. So the intent is out there. It's just that the specific project hasn't reared its head yet. So, but I believe that it will, and I believe that I'll be more involved in work like that.
Now, I want to know, are you ADD when it comes to instruments? I mean, you play guitar, banjo, piano, mandolin, ukulele, something called a bouzouki. I don't even know what that is.
It's a Greek sort of stringed instrument. It's got a great, great sound to it. But
how many strings are on that?
Not ADD at all. Eight.
Eight,
yeah,
okay.
Four sets of two.
And are you picking up anything new? Is there an instrument that you're like, I got to get my hands on? Seems like you don't ever tire of learning instruments.
Well, I'd like to learn to be a better piano player. I really, really, I love piano, and I just think what you can do on it is so expansive, you know? So I'd like to learn how to do that. I don't want to play it live yet, though, because I just suck too bad on it. But if I spend time really practicing, especially on my left hand, I mean, you've got a flat plane as opposed to the guitar, which is totally different. If I practice, though, I could definitely get better at that. I'd like to do that.
So talk to me.
I'm not ADD though. I really can only focus on one thing at a time. I'm very.
Oh really? So it just looks on paper like you play everything. Like if it's, you know, you just play so many instruments.
But I'm the complete opposite of ADD for sure.
Very into the one thing you're into. Well, talk to me about the thing I know you're into right now, which is the new CD, Poseidon and the Bitter Bug. Unusual title. How did the title come about?
Mitchell Froom produced the record, and it was his idea, and he's got a great sense of humor. He's always joking around, and he's like, man, these songs are depressing. You should call the record, like, Hiding in the Bitterbug, and we all laughed, you know. And but naming the record is maybe the hardest part of the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
And Amy's got her ideas, and I've got my ideas, and sometimes never the twain shall meet, but this was just a perfect, like, amalgamation of a joke and of, the you know, the content of these songs is quite heavy at times. And, you know, so Poseidon from me and the Bitterbug from Amy, and we liked it sort of had a playful, a sort of a whimsical quality to it, which lent itself to some really excellent artwork by a couple artist friends of ours, Denise Plum and Kathleen Horan. And so it was just the perfect title. When it came time to name it, we're like, let's use that, even though we were joking about it.
There's something so storybook. I mean, obviously, singer-songwriters, the original storytellers, and still get to be the storytellers of today. But there is something so narrative about, especially your writing, Emily. You know, it's so lyrical and narrative, and you use metaphor in a great, great way. And obviously Poseidon is mentioned in Fleet of Hope, and there's, you know, many uses of that, in your writing in, on this CD, as well as many others. But I'm really struck by a song called I'll Change, which seems really stripped down for you. And I don't know, just kind of the simplicity of the language and the images, and kind of wondering, when that was written, and, if you don't mind kind of giving an insight into
that. Yeah, that was the first... Okay, yeah, that was the first song of this bunch of songs that I wrote for this record. And I had a really, really bad writer's block this time around, like the worst I've ever had, probably for various reasons. But anyway, that was the first song I wrote. It was a little bit of a get-over-a-hump song. And, you know, this group of songs, it's very sort of approaching middle-aged sort of angst, you know? Asking a lot of questions, and, you know, like, everybody I knew was breaking up around me, like long-term relationships, and George Bush was still president, which was depressing, and, you know, it's just, it was a heavy time, very contemplative, and, like, can love last, and what's the meaning of all this stuff, and so I'll change. It is very simple. It's like it's a plea to myself to make changes, because, you know, as we all know, if we get into patterns of behavior in life or our histories, you'd like to break free from the things that either cause other people hurt or yourself, or and come to, you know, a clearer understanding of function in life, you know. So there was no way to really make that so poetic. It was just about, this is how I feel, and it's pretty straightforward. And for everyone who's ever been affected by my, you know, by ways that I've acted or not been responsible in life, here's an apology, you know, and here's to change. So there is hope in it, even though it's quite plaintive.
Well, it's obviously such a watchword, you know, this year politically, and yet it's just such a simple, I think accountability is what you're even referring to in this song, of just like, if
that's
I
right.
state it, then it has the ability to become so. And it just really
That's
was
exactly
moved
right.
by that song.
And it is, you know, that is an autobiographical song, and that is really, like, you know, when I go home, my friends and I, what we do like to do is get together and cook and talk about life, and some of it's serious and some of it's fun. It's a mixed bag, but and life goes on, hopefully, you know, but it is very much a simply stated song about where I was at that time.
Now, this is a two-disc release, and I'm curious as to, for people who don't know, who haven't gotten the CD yet, and I'm sitting here looking at it, the second CD is an acoustic version of the first CD. So, obviously, there was a idea about that, of something that you wanted to, something that informed that idea of doing this stripped-down acoustic approach. What did inform that idea, and what does it express about the music today of the Indigo Girls?
Well, again, it came as a joke for Mitchell. He's like, I think your fans hate me because I put production on your songs, you know, and we're laughing. And then he says, you should just, you know, make an acoustic record, just have a stripped down version. And I mean, the truth was that it was a really good idea, like, all joking aside, because I think our fans are really, they're very involved in our music, you know, and I think it's nice for them to be able to hear the songs as they were just after Amy and I finished arranging them, which is what the acoustic versions are. And there is a song on that CD called Salty South. It's not on the produced record.
It's always nice to have an extra. We live in an age of extras, don't we?
Oh, my God.
What are my bonus features, right?
It's so true. So there's an extra. and we had Allison Brown, tremendous banjo player out of Nashville, come in and play on that track. And she also played on I'll Change. Mm. Just such a beautiful solo in that song to me. So there are little textures in the acoustic version, but mostly it's just me and Amy sitting around with our guitars or mandolin or whatever, playing the songs around a bunch of microphones. And then the, you know, the produced versions are different. They have a different life, a different energy, obviously. And that took the bulk of the recording time. And then after that was done, we came in the studio and just sat around those mics and made the acoustic record in like 3 days.
Wow. You know, it is the first spark. You know, I think that I would imagine, I would say, this is my opinion, maybe others would say it, I think they would, of that there was kind of an invitation with your music, with Amy and with the Indigo Girls, of kind of come sit a spell with us, let us, you know, be a storyteller and come into our music and just sit down and be with us in this space, you know? And that's kind of where you started from. It's that sound of two voices and the two guitars. And it seems, I love that you said, you know, many of our fans kind of want this, still kind of experience with us. It's fairly intimate. It's the small, I mean, I have to admit, I'm originally from East Tennessee, which you don't know, but people on the podcast do. And, I used to go listen to you guys in Little Five Points. I mean, I think it's before Strange Fire, but it was definitely around that time. It was a long time
ago.
Mid-80s.
Yeah, mid-80s.
Yeah, I used to go down and listen to Kristen Hall and Wendy Bucklew, and I was going to school in Memphis and had friends in Atlanta and was growing up in East Tennessee. And so that's what it feels like to me. Like, your music takes me back to that place and time, you know?
Yeah, that's what we are. That's what we've always been, you know? And we've had a blast expanding on our music and producing it. And I actually like produced music in a studio. You know, I'm a big pop fan. Like, that beat can break my heart. You know, I'm just that girl who likes that kind of stuff. So, but Amy and I, we came together as friends, gathered around two guitars and two voices, and we wanted to fill up the sound with harmony and that's what we did. And so, and we were a bar band, you know, there was never any pretension about us. Bar band. And back in those days, the Little Five Points Club, you know, Kristen came on the stage to join us, and Wendy, and all the musicians, all the Motley crew. And it was like a big hoot nanny.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, and I think fans still feel that proximity to you guys. It's not like you've ever become unapproachable. But I imagine, you know, if you think that the fans are dictating, you know, your producer thinks the fans are dictating that you should do an acoustic album. I'm sure you've had some interesting experience with fans. I won't ask, but obviously I am. But you have avid fans. You're very loyal people. And I'm not going to talk about it.
They're very avid. They are avid. I don't read blogs or anything, so I don't know what they're saying, but I'm sure they're very opinionated. And, we just try to stay true to what feels good to us. And we do keep our fans in mind. We definitely do. And we want to make them happy as well. And it's never been a compromise between what we want to do creatively and what we think they might expect us or want us to do.
Yeah. And you said that you're a really big, you know, fan of music and pop music. Who do you listen to? I mean, who are you listening to today that we might be surprised is like...
Well, like Rihanna. I think she's amazing.
Yeah.
That song, I love her voice. It's got a bit of an edge to it that's unusual, and her control and her pitch and everything. And then, but a song like Hate That I Love You that she did with Neo. I mean, Neo's a pop genius.
I agree. I love him. I love both of them. She's not bad on the eyes.
Gorgeous. She's gorgeous. Oh, my God. But that's another story.
That's another story.
So she's just, I just think she's incredible. And I also like, I like all kinds of pop music, but I also like this group called the Weepies. Do you know them?
I don't know them.
They're a duo, a man and a woman, and they just have whimsical, lovely harmonies, really good songs. great imagery, kind of like not so specific that you know exactly what they're talking about, but mm-hmm. that stirs your imagination. Mm-hmm. And they're one of my favorite bands. Just love them. But, you know, like when I go home, I'm going to go see Heart in concert. It's one of my favorite bands of all time.
Yeah, so. Mine as well. That's exciting.
And I'm a big rap music fan. I'm into this guy now named Kenan. He's originally from Somalia, but he lives in Toronto. And his very, very hardcore political commentary rap. So mm-hmm. he's super bad.
I love it. I love it. Not at all what we would think. We might actually think like the rap is being listened to by Amy because of the influences that she brings in. But it's fabulous that those are your influences as well.
Yeah,
it's really, really great. Well, the CD, everybody should run out and get it. It's so amazing. I think this is one of your best. So I don't know, whatever the whole middle-aged angst, but, or maybe I'm kind of starting to feel like I'm heading there with you.
I feel so much better now than I did when I was so depressed when I wrote those songs. It's like, I probably just, you know, I don't know, write a pile of crap right now if I try to write a song. But anyway, you know, it comes when it comes. And it's just great to be able to still be out here playing and working with Amy. And it's just really great. I'm very grateful to our fans. I'm grateful to our career. I'm just feeling, you know, in the face of very, very dark economic times for so many people. Mm-hmm. It's I don't take it for granted that we're all able to get together for a night of music and have our hearts be stirred and be a little happy for a while. It's cool.
I agree. Well, the Indigo Girls, the new CD is Poseidon and the Bitter Bug. For those of you in the Chicago area, Pride Weekend, what a great weekend. You could kick it off with the girls at Ravinia, Friday, June 26th. Indigo Girls will be there. There's more at ravinia.org. They are also going to be in the upcoming months in Virginia, New York City, Michigan, Kentucky, California. They're heading to Europe. So no matter where you're listening to this podcast, you can just go to indigogirls.com. That's their main site, and catch up on all the information about them and the tour. And I'm sure there are lots of extras there for you as well, depending upon what you want to know about the ladies. So Emily, we it never has to be the first time ever again. Now you know where I am.
Well, it's awesome.
It's awesome.
I'm really looking forward to coming back to Chicago too. And thanks for your support. And yay for Gay Pride. That's all I can say.
Hey, that's enough.
Pride Fest 2009. Pride Fest. June 12th, 13th, and 14th at the Summerfest Grounds in Milwaukee, where Midwest Pride meets on Milwaukee's lakefront for the world's largest gay music festival, featuring full concert performances by Cyndi Lauper, Brandy, Etta James, Deborah Cox.
You'll never see me again.
And over 100 other performers. Pride Fest 2009, June 12th, 13th, and 14th at the Summerfest Grounds in Milwaukee. Get your tickets now at PrideFest.com.
So, Alex, it's been great having you on a couple of shows. And you are coming to Chicago, so we will be able to sit on the couch, have a burger, and record a Queercast very soon.
Glory, hallelujah.
And then we must talk all about your movie, because we have not talked about it, and we're not going to have time to talk about it now. So you'll have to remind me that we're going to talk about it when you're in Chicago.
Let's do it.
What's your first thing? What are the first three things you want to do when you get to Chicago, when you come home?
The first thing I want to do is go to Murphy's and have that burger, which is on Belmont, right next to the theater building.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, got to have a Murphy's burger. The second thing I want to do is I want to go look at the lake, because I miss seeing the lake and Lakeshore Drive.
Yeah.
And third thing I want to do is see my friends.
Yeah. We are all excited to see you.
Can't wait.
I cannot wait. So next time you hear Alex, she will be live in Chicago, probably on my couch. It's where we podcast the best. And and it will be good to have you back into the fold a little more. And we'll talk all about your exciting movie and everything else that's going on in your life.
Hooray for me.
Hooray for you. And in our next show, Deb Pierce will be on the show with me. She's getting ready, folks. She's packing as well. She's coming to Chicago for the big Windy City Gay Idol Finals. I'm going to be telling you in the next show about some of our finalists that will be competing. And also let you know, I can let you know right now, in the next show, I will be telling you about some guest performers. And it's exciting. You know, last year our guest performer was Lady Gaga, and then she zoomed up into the stratosphere. Nobody
She's
knew who she was.
Genius. I love her.
But
oh,
I knew
I
who
her.
She was. And so luckily when they asked, could she come? I said, please do. And then she rose like a comet. So I've got some great performers performing this year, along with our 2008 Windy City Gay Idol. Corey will be there. And I'll be telling you more about that in the next show, and getting Deb Pierce all excited about coming down here from Toronto, because we cannot wait to have her here. The Windy City Gay Idol Finals, June 13th, folks. Mark it on your calendars. You're going to want to be there. It's always a great time. And this year, for the first time, finals are also happening at Sidetrack. Alex, have a great week, and we will see you in Chicago.
Okay, Amy Mazzini.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast. Queer and now.